Welcome to Hot Girls Code, a podcast all about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech. I'm your host, Lola.
And I'm your host, Orty.
It's been just over a year since we dropped our first episode of Hot Girls Code, where we introduced ourselves, spoke a bit about our journeys in tech, and also how we got into tech. So we thought it was time for an update and a bit of a deeper dive. So we are so excited to be doing a two-part interview series.
This episode, I will be interviewing Lola, and then next episode, Lola will be interviewing me. And by the end of it, you all listening are going to know us so well. And of course, we know that the only way to start things off is by getting ourselves comfortable and breaking the ice. So let's start off with some fun, but still very important questions. And starting off easy, Lola, what is your favorite conspiracy?
I love how this is starting off easy. Like, yeah, let's dive straight into the conspiracy theories. Okay, well, my favorite conspiracy theory, I don't even know if it's a conspiracy theory at this point, but it's that the US government and other governments around the world have crashed UFOs and that they run reverse engineering programs. This conspiracy theory is very intriguing to me, and I've done a lot of like background research looking into, you know, everyone's heard about Roswell and like looking into people's accounts about what happened, and it is just really fascinating. Like, I don't know if there's something there or not, but if there was, how crazy would that be?
I think something to point out to our listeners is Lola and I have actually spent multiple lunchtimes talking about this particular conspiracy because both of us do strongly believe that there are aliens. And I don't know, it does feel pretty sus, all the stuff that's come out about UFOs recently, and lots of, you know, people with high up security clearance coming out and being like, actually, I know that we've covered stuff up.
And if you didn't know, the US actually had congressional hearings on UFOs like earlier in 2023. So it's not just like, you know, some crazy people with like tinfoil hats on talking about this stuff. This is like being discussed within Congress in the US. So that is kind of crazy. Let's continue watching this space and see what happens.
Yeah, let us know if you want us to start off a second podcast series specifically focusing on UFOs.
Hot Girls UFO.
Exactly. Moving on to maybe a potentially slightly easier question. Why don't you tell us about some hobbies that you have outside of Hot Girls Code?
So outside of Hot Girls Code, which takes a lot of our time outside of work, I have a few kind of main hobbies. So one of them is I like to play guitar. And actually, just from the start of this year, I've started writing my own songs.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool.
Yes, I'm just like the next Taylor Swift.
Are you gonna debut one on Hot Girls Code one day?
Maybe one day. Maybe that can be our new intro music.
Is it going to be as good as the last song you told us about? The one like, he's standing there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's about on par.
Next question, one that I am sure everyone is dying to know. What is the longest you've slept in one go?
I could probably win an award for sleeping. I am just so good at it. Like, I love sleeping. If I ever have free time, you'll probably just find me like curled up in bed, just like lying on my side, like, I'm cozy. But the longest time I've ever slept for, I believe upwards of 15 hours.
Honestly, that is wild to me. See, I would at least wake up at some point to like use the bathroom or because I'm hungry. Like, it amazes me that you manage that.
See, I would wake up and then I'd be like, oh, I'm in bed, I'm sleeping. And then I'd just be like, cool, back to sleep.
Oh my gosh, amazing. And finally, could you please describe the ultimate girl dinner meal? Because you are like the queen of girl dinners out of all of my friends, for sure.
I do love myself a girl dinner. And if anyone doesn't know what a girl dinner is, it's basically just any concoction that you throw together in the kitchen. That's just like last minute, like, you know, a bit of yesterday's leftovers, some crackers, some cheese, maybe, like maybe some slices of apple. But my personal favorite girl dinner would have to be crackers, hummus, cheese, and maybe some fruit to go with it. So, you know, it's not all just carbs. You've got some like fruit or vegetables, but only something that's really easy, like nothing that you have to peel. I hate peeling. That's one fun fact about me. So like if we're having potatoes or carrots or something, my partner will jokingly be like, oh, you can do the peeling because I know how much you love that. And I don't know why I hate it so much, but I'm just like, this is food. We should just eat it. I don't want to have to peel it. This is ridiculous. Like, there's too many steps involved.
I want to eat it the way nature intended it to be eaten.
Exactly. I also saw this great TikTok, which was like a girl that was cooking and she was like, why don't we just do this? And then she just like gets a carrot and just like chomps it up in her mouth and then just like spits it on the plate. And she's like, if it's just me eating it, like, why do I need to cut this up? And I saw that and that was like life changing. I've never done that, just to be clear. I don't do that. But I really stand behind the efficiency of, like, why do we need to have, like, a chopping board and a knife when you can just chop it all up in your mouth?
When I decided on this question, I just didn't think this is where we were going to end up. Everyone that's listening, I literally just sat there with my hand covering my mouth that entire, like, last 20 seconds. Remind me to never eat anything you cook that involves carrots.
I've never done this before. I need to clarify that. But it just really resonated with me.
Great. And on that note, I think the ice is well and truly broken. So why don't we get into actually talking about your technical journey and your like career journey? So the first thing we want to chat about is sort of, what did you study at uni?
So I studied software engineering at uni, and that is actually where I met Aughty. We were both in the Women in Engineering Network, and that is how we first met, which is pretty cool. But yeah, so it was a four-year degree. It had an honours component, which was like a fourth-year project. And now that's a few years behind me, I can safely say that I've forgotten almost everything I learned at uni.
So you decided to study software engineering. What got you actually interested in tech?
Honestly, I wasn't sure what I was going to study at first, so I went in to do engineering, and you do a very broad first year. So I had my first year coding paper, and that was my first real experience with coding and kind of the whole tech world. And I just really enjoyed that paper, and it made a lot of logical sense to me because I was always quite good at maths and physics, and, you know, just kind of problem solving in that domain. In a lot of ways, programming was really similar, but it was just like, oh, you've got all these new tools for and new ways to solve problems. So that was kind of what really got me interested in tech and how I personally kind of started coding. But I have always had an interest in tech. Growing up, I really loved Club Penguin, so I was on the computer quite a lot. So as you can imagine, it's like the Club Penguin to software developer pipeline. It's just really strong.
I mean, I too played a lot of Club Penguin, so, you know, in this room, 100%, so the theory is proven. So casting your mind back to uni, for people studying at university or college and maybe feeling like they're reaching a point where, you know, they don't know if they can keep going and don't know what to do, what are some tips on how they can try to kind of get through to the finish line?
I reached that point many a time, especially studying software engineering, where it felt like you were just surrounded by all of these incredibly smart people, and a lot of the people had tons of programming experience. Well, you know, they'd been programming since they were a kid because their dad was a software developer, whereas I never had that kind of exposure. So I definitely dealt with a lot of imposter syndrome of kind of feeling like, oh, well, like everyone else has a head start and everyone's so much smarter than me. But I think in order to push through that, what really helped me was having a core group of people that I could rely on. So I had a group of maybe six or seven of us at uni, and we'd all come together and we'd work on assignments together. Of course, we wouldn't share answers.
Academic integrity.
Precisely. But, you know, we would help each other out, especially if it was, you know, a group assignment and you're all working together anyway. But yeah, I think having that core group of people who maybe have around the same experience as you or a little bit more, so it's someone that you can actually learn off, I think that really helps because you can encourage each other and really build each other up, as opposed to if you're just by yourself. Going at it alone, it can be a lot harder.
Yeah, I really sympathize with people that did remote university during those last few years of the pandemic, because I feel like definitely I was the same, where the thing that got me through the end of my university degree were the people around me. And even if they weren't like good friends of mine, they were still, we would all like hang out in the computer labs together and we'd all help each other out. And the idea of having to do that like alone in your bedroom, like of course those intrusive thoughts of like, I'm not good enough, what am I doing? Of course they would come.
And just to see other people struggling, and it's like, oh, okay, that's right. What we're doing is actually really hard. It's not easy.
So moving on from university and more into the present day, could you tell us a bit about your career journey so far?
So my career journey started when I was in uni, and I had a few internships at various software companies. So for the degree that both Auti and I did, engineering, you do have to do 800 practical work experience hours. So that meant that a lot of people studying engineering would do internships over the summer. So that was my first exposure to actually working in the tech industry. And I had a super positive experience, and honestly, it was nothing like what I thought being a developer would be like. So I had a great time in my internships. I finished my degree, and then I was like, okay, I guess it's time to get a job. So after I finished university, I started at the company I'm currently at as a junior full stack developer. And I did that for about a year and a half. And then after about a year and a half, I started kind of thinking, oh, what else is out there? You know, like when I first joined the tech industry, I suddenly realized that there were all these roles that I'd never learned about in uni that I'd never heard about before. And one of these roles was called a delivery lead, which is basically like an amalgamation of a scrum master and a product owner. So I spent just over a year as a delivery lead, and then just recently, a few months ago, I actually decided to transition back to being a software developer. So currently I'm working as an intermediate full stack developer.
I really want to dig into your experience as a delivery lead and then transitioning back into a technical role a bit more. So one of the things that I think people would be interested in knowing is, what was the value of having your foundational technical skills while you were in a non-technical role?
I think it was really valuable, and I had quite a few people actually say to me, like, oh, I can tell that you have a technical background because you're able to keep up to date in these conversations where other people who didn't have a technical background might get a little bit more lost. So I think having that tech background was really, really beneficial to being in a non-technical role, because it's the little things of when developers are talking about, you know, certain tech stacks or certain coding conventions, and being able to follow that along, where it compared to if you're just given an answer and it's like, oh, okay, I have no idea how they reached that answer, but they said it, so I guess I'll just go with it.
I really love that, and I think it's something that we've had other people ask us about, like, oh, if I don't necessarily want to go, like, ultimately into a non-technical role, what's the value in having those technical skills? And I feel like you really highlighted that well. And what made you decide to go back to being a software developer after you'd been a delivery lead for over a year?
Honestly, the main reason was the amount of meetings that I had. You would just look in my calendar and it was pretty much 9 to 5. I was just in meetings and I was updating stakeholders and communicating with all of these people. I was looking after two teams, so that meant that all of the agile ceremonies that you would have in one team, I was doing double, and for most of them, I was also facilitating. And I consider myself quite an extroverted, like, bubbly person, but I found that when I was facilitating this many meetings, I just got so drained. And it also meant that I didn't have a lot of focus time to be just working on the little details and the little things that I really wanted to be working on. And that's one thing that I did in my delivery lead role, was I tried to really find the opportunities to do the more technical things. So I did a lot of JIRA and EasyBI reporting, because that was as close as I could get to coding without actually becoming a developer again. So it was quite cool that it was a broad enough role that I could find different things that interested me.
But ultimately, you miss technology and tech so much.
Yep, absolutely.
I think it's really great how your journey shows that there isn't just one pathway in tech, and you can do different roles to gain, you know, different experiences. So what's something you learned during your time as a delivery lead that you're now taking with you as you go back into being a developer?
I think probably just a greater understanding of how difficult it is to actually come up with a roadmap, make sure that we're delivering to that roadmap, making sure that we have all the tickets on the JIRA board, just having all those things covered. They're sort of the things that you can forget that someone has to do. But when I was actually in that role doing them, I really saw the value of, like, when you're a developer, a lot of it just kind of happens and you're just along for the ride. But when I was in that non-technical, more leadership role, I actually saw how all of that played out and how you do all of these things behind the scenes in order to make things easier for your teams. So it definitely gave me more of an appreciation for that side of things.
Yeah, and I feel like that makes, like, the work more enjoyable, because sometimes if you don't have that insight or that perspective, I know some people are just like, why has this happened this way? Or why do we even have to do these things? And you're like, no, there's a reason. There's a process, and there's a reason for that process.
Yeah, exactly. And I think being able to kind of see behind the scenes just gives me a more appreciation for it.
Definitely. Speaking of, you know, you moving back into a developer role, what would you say is your favourite part of being a developer?
I think I love just when you get into that flow state and you're solving a problem and you're coding and you've got your headphones on, listening to some music. For me, it's always Lana Del Rey, mostly unreleased. And you just kind of get into that flow state and everything is going well. I really love that.
Yeah, honestly, I am the same. There is nothing quite like it. Now, this next question is actually an audience question from Instagram. Now that you've been in the industry for a few years, what do you think is the biggest misconception about working in the tech industry?
I think the biggest misconception of working in the tech industry is that everyone just sits and writes code all day, because that is just not at all what it's like. It's a lot more collaborative than you might have thought, and there are a lot of roles which exist that you may not have even heard of. Like when I first started out in tech, I had no idea that delivery lead was a thing, and it was only once I'd started working for a year that I figured, hey, this is something that I could try out. So I think from the outside looking in, you might just think, oh, it's a bunch of people sitting at their laptops writing code all day. Like, doesn't sound very exciting. But actually, when you get into the tech industry, it's a lot different to that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Something I find with a lot of people when I say the company I work for and the fact that it's a website and how many who work for the company, people are always so shocked that there's so many different roles and so many different people that go into just running a website. They're like, why do you need that many people?
They're like, but the website's built. What are you doing now?
Exactly. And you're like, no, there's lots of people that write the code, but then there's also people that do the strategy. There's people that do the marketing, that do the design. There's so much to it. Okay, deep question alert. We are both in our mid-20s, some of us more in the mid than others. And that means we are both in the midst of a quarter-life crisis and wondering what we're doing with our lives and what we hope to accomplish. And that can be really scary, but it's also an exciting time filled with possibilities. That's what I try to tell myself. So thinking about your career in tech, what kind of impact do you hope to have in tech?
I think, especially with Hot Girls Code, the impact that I want to have is to break down those barriers of entry for women and girls and just be a bit of a role model to show that actually you don't have to look a certain way to work in tech or to be a software developer. So if I can have an impact on other young girls out there listening to Hot Girls Code who suddenly think, I like Taylor Swift and I like dogs. Maybe I could be a coder and, you know, I don't have to wear like a hoodie all day. Like Auti and I are sitting here today, both wearing like pretty little sundresses and like makeup on and stuff. And like, it's just nice when you can feel like you're totally being yourself. And the impact I want to have is showing other people that they can do that too.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think one of the very cool things about doing Hot Girls Code is we get to have our own unique impact on the tech industry by sharing experiences, creating a community, and then hopefully that helps the people that maybe have historically felt isolated, you know, feel a bit more connected. And one of the ways we've done this on the show is we've talked about how isolating imposter syndrome can be. And I know this is something you're super passionate about. You touched on it a bit when you're talking about your experience at university. Why is it so important for you to highlight something like imposter syndrome? And what have your own experiences been like while in the workforce?
So I'll tell you a story. Yesterday, I was walking to the sushi shop with my partner at lunch because we're working from home and we're like, okay, we don't have any food. As you can tell, I'm not a very good cook. So we walked to the sushi place to get lunch and I wasn't feeling very good about myself yesterday. And I say to my partner, I feel like I'm a fraud. And then he turns to me and he says, me too. And because, you know, I think of my partner and he's also a software developer and I think, wow, he's so put together and he's so smart and so knowledgeable. And I think of myself and I think about all of these negative things, you know, as everyone does. It's like Velcro. All the negative stuff tends to stick and the positive stuff just slides right off. But hearing him say, oh, actually, he feels like a fraud as well, I think that a lot of people in tech suffer from imposter syndrome, and I felt it every step of the way. You know, when I was in uni and saw all of these smart people around me who had so much more coding experience than I had, or when I first joined the workforce and suddenly I'm surrounded by people who have 20 years plus experience on me. So I feel like comparing yourself to others is probably the crux of where imposter syndrome comes from. And that's something I've always been really bad at, so it's something I'm working on. But I think having open conversations about things like imposter syndrome, and also just naming it, naming that as, oh, I feel like a fraud. That's imposter syndrome. That's not actually me. That's not even me thinking that. That's this imposter syndrome that's sinking in. So I think it's really important to talk about it. I think it's really important to realize that a lot of people suffer from this. It's not just you. And that has been my experience with imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I feel like when you hear about people that you admire or that you you think of and you think they're so capable and say so confident,
how could they ever have imposter syndrome?
And when you hear them say, I had this too, you're just like, okay. So it's not something that's directly related to experience. And I mean, we could talk about imposter syndrome for ages because we have a whole episode about it.
It's the funniest thing because imposter syndrome literally isn't about you. It's about
society.
It's about society. It's not a reflection on you at all. So if there's one thing to take away that. Imposter syndrome, not a reflection on you.
And if you want to hear us talk about imposter syndrome for much longer, we have an entire episode on it, so definitely check that out. So far, we have spoken about your journey and your experiences in tech, and I now wanted to move on to focusing a bit more of the conversation onto Hot Girls Code.
I love that podcast.
The best podcast ever. So obviously, this has been born out of our shared passion for women in tech, and I think the audience would really love to know what's the origin story for your passion for women in tech.
So the origin story for my passion for women and equality and feminism in general actually started when I was in primary school. And I vividly remember sitting on the mat and we're being taught about the suffragette movement. And we're being taught that women got the right to vote and now everyone's equal. And hey, isn't that great? We got equality. And I remember when I was hearing about this, about how women used to not have the right to vote and women couldn't work, I remember hearing that and I was so shocked. And it made me feel so angry inside. And I remember thinking as a kid, thinking, oh, damn, it's so annoying that I wasn't alive back then because I would have loved to like be a feminist and like fight the patriarchy and fight for the rights of women. Little did I know that actually the world wasn't as equal as we were taught. But that is one core memory which I remember, and I've always just had a passion for women and a passion for women's rights. So it kind of just made sense that when I did enter a male-dominated industry, then suddenly that passion for women in tech would just grow.
I absolutely love that, and I love that. Definitely, I feel like that's a narrative we get taught a lot as like kids, is like, it's equal, everything is fixed. So hey, glad that you found out that the patriarchy is still alive and well and you can still fight it.
Yeah, so stoked about that.
Speaking more about Hot Girls Code specifically, why do you think we need something like Hot Girls Code?
For me personally, I think it's needed because we need more women to look up to and we need to hear more women's voices in these spaces which are typically male dominated. Girls growing up, if they don't see that this is something that they can do, then they just won't think of that as something that they can do. Like personally, I never considered being a software developer when I was a child because I had this preconceived notion of what that looked like and I knew that I didn't fit into that. So with Hot Girls Code, it's about showing people that, hey, you can be your authentic self. You can be this girly girl. You can be a tomboy. You can be whatever kind of person that you want and you can also work in tech.
It really is crazy to think that it's been a year since we went live with our first episode and we've managed to do a lot since then. What is your favorite thing about creating Hot Girls Code?
My favorite thing about creating Hot Girls Code has just been connecting with other young women and young girls all over the world that are either studying computer science or they work in the tech industry or they're in high school and they're thinking about going into tech, and being able to connect with all of these amazing women and to empower them and to show them that, hey, this is a place that you can be as well.
It's honestly such a cool and amazing experience. And yeah, I totally agree with everything you just said. going back to talking about you, Lola, we've been friends for a while. I tried to do the math and time was really hard and it hurt my head, but I think we've known each other for about 6 years. And something I have been really inspired by you the entire time I've known you is your confidence. I feel like you're someone who's unafraid to be brave and stand up for herself. Where does that come from?
So I actually have this hidden pocket in my body and I store all my confidence there. That's a really great question. Because I think the whole confidence idea is interesting. And I have been asked this before, like, oh, how are you so confident? Which I'm not sure if that's meant to be in like a condescending way. Like, huh, you shouldn't be that confident.
Well, I think it's in an admirable way. Like, I want to learn to be that confident. That's how I mean it.
No, but I have been asked that before. And I've sort of wondered because I was never a particularly confident teenager or a kid. But I always made decisions to be confident. So if there were opportunities that I could put my hand up, I would take them, even if it scared me. So I think a lot of what I do is to push myself to do the things that scare me. And I think that helps build confidence because you have to be confident. Once you've already put your hand up and, you know, you're being asked to talk at something, then the confidence just comes out of you because it has to be there.
I love that, getting like your past self to get your future self into situations where you have to be confident.
Yeah, it's forcing yourself into situations of growth. And I think that I've done that enough that I have kind of that confidence in myself and my abilities.
I love that. And I feel like that's a really great, like, practical tip if someone wanted to work on their confidence. It's like, make that a decision, make a conscious decision to try to be brave, pick things to be brave about.
And you are probably not going to feel confident because I think that confidence can be both a feeling and also an action. So for me, confidence is an action that I take actively every day, even when I'm not feeling confident. But that feeling of confidence often comes after you do that thing that empowers you or you make that speech in front of people, even though that's really scary for you to do. Once you do that, then that's when the feeling of confidence actually comes.
I absolutely love that. And I'm literally like taking this in right now. And I was like, I need to remember to choose confidence, even when I don't feel confident. We're getting close to the end of our interview, but something we've mentioned a few times on the show is your love of organization. And I thought this tied in really nicely with an audience question we got over on Instagram, and that is all about organization and time management. So I was wondering, how do you manage your time effectively, both at work and then also balancing Hot Girls Code?
One of the main ways that I manage my time is through my Google Calendar. I know a lot of people listening are probably like, heck yes, that is the way to go. And I totally agree because I think if you can schedule out time for you to do things in your calendar, then it just makes it a little bit less intimidating. Now, I say this, but also I'm terrible at booking in all my time and then it arrives to the time I'm meant to do the thing. And I'm like, oh no, let's not do that. And like rejig things around a little bit. So I think you do need to be flexible, but I think just having some kind of structure to begin with really helps. And also making sure that you're estimating how long something is going to take accurately. So an easy mistake to make is saying, oh, okay, I'll set aside an hour to do this thing. And actually, realistically, maybe that thing's going to take you 3 hours. And then if you only set aside an hour, that might make you feel not so good about it if you don't get it done in that time. So I think being really realistic about how long you think something's going to take and be conservative. Like if you think that it's going to take you an hour, give yourself 2 hours because then you can just chill a little bit. It's a little bit less stressful and you don't have that pressure on you to get it done in a set amount of time.
Yeah, I am a big advocate for my Google Calendar. My entire life lives on there. And yeah, I try to not make to-do lists. I try to just schedule things. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you will have lots of little things. I'll even like go through the to-do list of little things and I'll be like, how long will each of these take? And then I'll name the to-do list and I'll literally make a calendar event to be like, do the to-do list of this thing if I think it's like a bunch of 5-minute tasks.
100%. And if you are a list person, then write your list and then prioritize things so that you're doing the high priority things first. And also the quick wins. Like if there's something that's going to take you 10 minutes to do that you've been putting off for months, like for example, phoning the physio to book in a physio appointment, which is something which I would totally put off because I hate phone calls and I feel like everyone does. But you know, think about those little easy wins that'll make you feel better. It's something you can tick off, but it's actually low effort to do.
Love that. A lot of really great advice. And that brings us to the end of today's episode.
Finally, the grilling's over.
Yeah, I hope you enjoyed being on the other side of things today, Lola.
Well, our next episode is going to be part two of our interview series, and this time it'll be Aughty Under the Grill, and I'll be interviewing Aughty.
If you enjoyed this episode, we would really appreciate it if you could share it with your friends or on social media to help us spread the word and get Hot Girls Code to more wonderful women. Feel free to also leave a rating and subscribe to Hot Girls Code wherever you get your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram and TikTok under @hot_girls_code to keep up to date with the podcast and learn more about the tech industry, software development, and being a woman in tech.
Thanks for listening.